This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good afternoon. This is Frida Liu, and you're listening to Enterprise Biz Bikes. Arvind Yuvaraj is in the studio with me. Arvind, this is the first time we are together. And Richard Bradbury is sitting quietly in the corner. Anyway, what we do in this show is we normally run down a whole bunch of stories to keep you updated on the world of business, SMEs, and tech.
Yeah, so today we have stories on TV shows being stolen by hackers, a report on non-gaming apps and how they can make more money in the coming years, and also how many army veterans are in the US and how they can find jobs using a social media app called Sandbox.
Okay, right. But first, let's talk about something that a lot of Mac users might want to take note of, because by the looks of it, the Mac may have finally been hit by its first major scale malware, a phrase that Mac users didn't have to really worry about before this. I knew this day would come.
Yeah, so there's been a sudden surge of malware attacks on Mac users all of a sudden, and it's kind of weird because Mac systems are usually like relatively safe.
Oh, so they thought.
That's the whole reason why some people opt to always go for MacBook despite the price and the fact that you have to go out of your way to get software configured for the iOS. Unfortunately, things are only getting worse for them because Checkpoint researchers have discovered something called Doc, which is labeled as the first major scale Trojan that targets Mac OS users through an email phishing scam.
And the funny thing is, because some people have been avid Mac users for so long, they're not aware of phishing scams or as alert as their PC counterparts, because we get inundated by this every day about all these malware attacks online. So that sense of immunity seems to be making Mac users a little more vulnerable towards these threats.
Yeah, it does. And because the thing about phishing scams is that you really have to go out of your way to get infected. It's not like opening a link or reading an email can give you the malware. So you'd have to actually download an application or a zip file, which then unleashes the Trojan like onto your system. It's the same scenario with Doc. The bogus messages are meant to trick you into downloading the zip file. And if you launch it, it gives the malware control over your system and lets attackers intercept your internet traffic to spy on your activity or even impersonate websites. And then it'll even delete itself when the intruders are done.
You're not a Mac user, right?
No, I'm not. PC. Okay. Fully PC.
Neither am I. So we're used to this.
Yeah.
So this basically spies on you and maybe even robs you, then disappears into thin air once it's done. And if you do fall prey to that malware, iMore has instructions that will help you scrub your system clean. However, the rogue code also relies on a faked certificate that bypasses Apple's gatekeeper screening, giving it a free pass in your whole system if you're not careful. So it might be easy to avoid, but it's potentially very damaging if it gets through and you don't look for warning signs.
Yeah, and the more than anything, Doc is a very dangerous reminder that you can't assume you're safe just because you're on a non-standard platform. Malware writers still like to target Windows because it represents the largest potential target, and Windows is also apparently easier to infect, but some of these malware attackers are willing to aim at Mac users just because it's an untapped market. They have unsuspecting victims, which means that they'll get to have those bragging rights, you know, once their malware has infiltrated like Mac's tough security blocks.
You know, I think the most important route is to take here is prevention, right? Users need to be extra alert about what they download and what kinds of email they trust. Obviously, this attack depends on the person downloading an extra file and then infecting the system. So Mac users have to keep an extra eye out for potential phishing scams.
Yeah, but the problem that is that it's not the only disturbing news regarding intrusions that we have, you know, that happened in the long weekend. So Larson Studios in the US was the victim of a major hacking operation, and in the end the hackers managed to escape with the unreleased season of Orange is the New Black. And news just came out that Orange isn't the only show they've stolen, because apparently they have 36 other unreleased and upcoming shows in their possession as well,
which is moving into story two. Here's a quick recap of what happened over the weekend. So a group of hackers called the Dark Overlord, it's got to have a fancy name, managed to break into the storage units at Larson Studios, which is where a lot of major cable and streaming content is kept. And they stole unreleased episodes from the upcoming Orange is the New Black season, which is a hit show on Netflix, in case you didn't know. Obviously, Netflix got the authorities involved and everyone thought that was the end of it. Unfortunately, the group now says they have a whole bunch of other shows in their possession and are asking for the victim companies to pay a ransom to keep the episodes under wraps.
Yeah, and they've been hyping Orange for a long time on Netflix. They keep saying that it's coming up. So this is kind of like a blow to them. And like I mentioned below, apparently they they're holding 36 shows hostage. And to prove that they actually have the content, the hackers release like preview clips of the shows. And these are previews from upcoming episodes of Fox's New Girl, FX's It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, IFC's Portlandia, and CBS's NCIS LA, just to name a few. And then there are also singular titles and movies like the Vin Diesel movie XXX Return of Xander Cage and Netflix's Bill Nye Saves the World, and even stuff like YouTube Red Originals. Most of the companies have declined to comment, so we're not sure if the group is going to get what it wants. And there's also no guarantee that even if they are paid the ransom, that these episodes won't end up online eventually before any of the content has aired on TV or even appears on Netflix.
It's just one of those threats, right? This is an ear. This is a finger.
Like a finger, like,
that
yeah.
we've got. Okay, now, so some new news outlets are reporting that time is running out for The Dark Overlord because some of the episodes have already begun airing and stuff like Bill Nye Saves the World is already available in its entirety on Netflix. So they're pretty much lost out on that bargaining chip. So in that sense, these hackers might be more desperate than we thought because it looks like they need to hold on to the content as much as they can. Otherwise, they'll lose their leverage in this whole scenario.
Yeah, and this is where streaming services like Netflix have the advantage with their model because since they release all the episodes at a go, the best way would be to move their shows up a bit and legally release them on the platform, like all episodes, which would immediately make whatever the hackers have completely useless. I mean, even if they release it online after that, it doesn't make a difference because once it's on Netflix, anyone, like other people are already going to pirate it and
other
put it
people.
Online. Yeah, other people.
Other people, right?
Yeah.
So I think the takeaway from this is that Netflix and other conventional studios are going to be evaluating the internet security of their partners to make sure that this doesn't happen again anytime soon. Mm-hmm. All right, so let's have some music and messages, and in a while we'll talk about why non-gaming apps are as lucrative as their gaming counterparts. This is Enterprise BizBikes, BFM 89.9.
Behind famous men. BFM 89.9.
You're listening to Enterprise BizBikes. I'm Frida Liu, and here with me is Arvind Yuvaraj. So there was a very interesting report from a mobile market research firm called Newzoo that popped up over the weekend about non-gaming apps and how they could be as lucrative as their gaming counterparts. So it's also partners with Talking Data, Priory Data, Push Whoosh, Delta DNA, and Save DK for mobile data. It's no secret that people love to splurge on games and an in-app purchases, mm-hmm. while other apps struggle to make money or break even. But this is starting to change as companies figure out ways to monetize their non-game apps.
Yeah, so the share of revenue for non-game apps and in-game stores worldwide went up from 15% in 2015 to 16% last year, which is a super small increase, but it's still slightly up. The good news for these non-game developers is that the number it is projected to accelerate by 30% annually to reach nearly a quarter of total app revenue by 2020. So chat apps like Line from Japan and Kakao from Korea topped the revenue list on Google Play last year, while Tinder, which is the leader in dating apps from the US, came in third. And there's a French dating app called Adopt a Guy, which is an app where women are supposed to make the first move. It climbed to number 8 after launching in the US.
So the... I just said llama dog guy. It's like a pet. Now, the iOS store is a little different. While chat and dating apps made way on Google Play, music and video apps dominated the iOS app store, with streaming services like Spotify and Netflix leading the way, no surprises. Chinese video on demand app iQIYI was 8th, with its American counterpart Hulu coming in 10th. There are also other Asian companies on lists like Line and Tencent, as you mentioned, but these rankings are based only on direct revenues from app stores instead of secondary sources of revenue such as e-commerce on Tencent's WeChat.
Yeah, so according to this report, apart from new ways of monetizing the apps, revenue growth for apps will come from the rise of smartphone users from 2.6 billion at the moment to about 3.6 billion in 2020. So that's about one billion user rise in just about 3 years. And more than a quarter of the next billion smartphone users will be from India, which pretty much overtook the US last year to stand next to China as most number of smartphone users, although India still is a very, very long way behind the average market when it comes to spending power.
Yeah. You know, just very interesting, you were talking about Tencent's WeChat and how WeChat is happening in China. Mm-hmm. You know, you can book a taxi, do your groceries, the kind of revenues that comes from...
It's become like an all-in-one app kind of thing. Yeah.
So they're just way ahead in terms of the marketing and the money that comes from that, right? Mm-hmm. So a more interesting bits of information, the report says that the top four countries in terms of smartphone penetration are all from the Middle East. That's Qatar, the UAE, Bahrain and Kuwait, which reflects the high incomes within that population. So just look at Qatar, for instance, and how it has the highest per capita GDP in the world. And then we have our lovely neighbours down south, Singapore, who are fifth in the list with 3/4 of its population using smartphones. I'm surprised it's not everybody.
And there's a whole quarter market there for them to tap into that's not using smartphones yet in Singapore, so that's big. The biggest headroom for growth as far as number of users is concerned is in India, because they have the numbers that they just, you know, they just need to be pushed towards being more active smartphone users. And for these app makers, active means they need to start taking out some serious cash to buy stuff in the app itself.
Okay, so India is the one to watch out for. So yes, games are big now, but innovation areas like streaming, AR, mobile payments and mini apps such as Google's instant apps will have a significant impact on the mobile economy in the future. The report also anticipates alternative app distribution channels such as third-party app stores and direct downloads to become more important in the coming years, especially in the Android market. So, when we return, we'll talk about a story that absolutely stinks. Okay, stick around. Stick around. This is Enterprise Biz Bytes, BFM 89.9.
Break from mediocrity. BFM 89.9.
Good afternoon. You're still listening to Frida Liu and Arvind Yuvraj on Enterprise Biz Bytes. We told you we have a story that stinks and we weren't lying.
Yeah, so one of the biggest challenges for any parent is checking a baby's diaper without waking the sleeping baby. Because any parent knows that it is not easy to get a baby to sleep, and just when you think they're fast asleep, the tiniest sounds or movement could wake them up. So I guess Korean startup Monit felt that frustration and also wanted to leverage on this. So they've designed a new Bluetooth sensor that wants to make sniff tests a thing of the past by alerting parents as soon as the baby's diaper is dirty. And then later on, the sensor can be turned into a portable air quality and temperature monitor just to extend its usefulness.
You say like you're an expert parent,
I've seen a lot of parents.
Okay, now the sensor is pretty small, flat and round, looks just like a macaron. They also claim that the Monit sensor helps parents who are worried about changing diapers in time to avoid accidents and skin irritation, which is a valid concern because you don't have to leave salt Pampers on your baby for too long. And that's exactly how this whole idea came about. So Monit's founder, Tony Park, not to be confused with Tony Stark, began working on the sensor because one of his two daughters suffered from atopic dermatitis and he needed to make sure she was always in a dry diaper.
Yeah, so this pretty much comes from an actual parent who had very real concerns about his baby's health. Tony submitted his idea to C-Lab, which is an incubator program by four Samsung Electronics employees, and got enough funding to work on Monit for a whole year. And now they've finally come out with its first products, which is the sensor and a baby carrier called BebeFit or BebeFit. I think BebeFit sounds nicer. And both products are getting ready to ship this summer in Korea before expanding to the US and other major Asian markets like China and Japan. Not sure if we'll be seeing this in Malaysia, but if the concept works, we might see, you know, similar copycat products just show up soon.
You can be sure of that. Now, but you're also probably wondering, how does the sensor detect if a diaper needs changing? So let's get down to the dirty details. One of the benefits of a Monit sensor is that it goes outside the diaper and can detect feces and urine by monitoring a combination of temperature, humidity and gas. Gas, right? Park says this sets Monit apart from similar products that only detects urine and must be placed in place inside the diaper to work, right?
Yeah.
You don't want to do that. The sensors can be embedded into the hip of its new baby carrier.
Yeah, and I think the biggest benefit here is that parents don't have to physically sniff their babies anymore to assess the damage. And speaking of the baby carrier, it was also inspired by Park's experiences because he was constantly carrying his children to soothe them because it was a struggle trying to find the perfect baby carrier, like one that's not too hot or not too flimsy and is supportive without being too bulky. After a while, he developed shoulder and back pain, and then he started working with Samsung Medical Center to design the BebeFit or BebeFit carrier's adjustable hip seat, which lets parents shift where their baby's weight is centered throughout the day.
But I'll tell you this as a parent, like, you know, your baby never stinks.
Oh, no?
Yeah, you know, never stinks. In your world, it smells like, you know, perfume.
Flowers.
Yes, yes. So Monit is doing pretty well for themselves at the moment. They're currently making prototypes to prepare for mass production with the goal of hitting the market by August. So we're off for a bit. And next, we'll talk about a social network for military veterans who are looking for jobs. So that's up next. BFM 89.9.
Break from midfield. BFM 89.9.
Good afternoon. You're listening to Enterprise Biz Bites. Frida Liu here together with Arvind Yuvaraj. And now we've all heard about how veterans of the military sometimes find it hard to ease back into the workforce once they've retired from active duty. So that's why a social media platform called Sandbox with two X's wants to make it easier for ex-army personnel to look for jobs based on their specific skill sets.
Yeah, so this is more of a US-centric story because this is an issue that that is rampant over there, and we always hear about ex-military people coming back from the war, and some of them end up struggling financially because no one wants to hire them. So on one end, they are decorated for the achievements, but on the other hand, a lot of them can't blend back into society, which creates a very lopsided, unfair situation for these vets.
And I think this is probably a challenge here as well, because you retire at a certain nation, and what do you do after that, right?
Yeah.
And then we've seen all these movies, like, oh, these vets that come back, I don't know what to do, right? So global firm Vets Recruiting is helping out with Sandbox, and they'll join the self-described military media and technology company to empower vets to seek careers in the tech industry and to demonstrate their unique value to potential employers. Vets says that they are proud to expand their ongoing commitment to help remove barriers so that more veterans gain access to these opportunities. And to better serve this community, Vets trained a team of recruiters to help veterans translate their military experience into valuable skill sets for tech sales.
Yeah, and Sandbox founder and CEO Sam Meek is pretty passionate about this mission, and he even argues that vets bring a wide spectrum of unique advantages to the table. There's a resiliency within warfighters that transfers well into the tech space, and with a sense of curiosity and duty to accomplish the mission, they see many veterans adapting these unique military skills into the workplace. And Meek says that between their leadership experience and service, vets are actually ideally suited to the high-pressure environment of the startup culture.
Okay, to be honest, here's some solid points. So the military structure actually allocates time for veterans to acquire the kind of skills they make for desirable talent among tech companies. Mm-hmm. People have to understand that successful transitions to civilian lifestyle begins with months, if not a year, of preparation beforehand. The time needed to learn how to become a mobile engineer or refine enterprise sales talent is afforded to those making this leap out of the army. And it's pretty much one of the most overlooked benefits of serving in the U.S. military. Not only that, I'll give you a story of a gentleman I knew who was in the army and then join, into training and all that. He says, a lot of the skills, when they talk about teamwork in the army, right, they really mean it, because if there's no teamwork, someone's going to die.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
So they have to apply it there, yeah.
The whole value of teamwork. Whereas, I guess in the workplace, your normal place, no one's going to die.
It's either maybe, yeah. So the stakes are not too high.
Yeah, so that kind of inbuilt teamwork spirit is something that, you learn from being in the military.
Yeah, and it's mandatory there also. Yeah. So, and I think vets getting involved with this helps a lot, because while vets might have built up their skill sets while in the military, a specialized company like Vets will offer consulting for the interview process in addition to working with hiring managers and potential hires to find that ideal career fit. Vets is also one of those companies which made a public commitment to veterans back in November 2016 and has already pursued veteran-specific partnerships with a bunch of tech companies, including Everstring, MuleSoft, Eat Club, and Dynamic Signal, to hire veterans to join their sales teams. So Sandbox pretty much chose the perfect firm to back them up on this operation to help these vets.
And apparently firms like to hire veterans in sales development or account executive positions because both roles require a great deal of resiliency and diligence, and I said teamwork early on, with salaries ranging from $65,000 to $85,000. More experienced veterans might end up in sales leadership with a salary range of $120,000 to $170,000.
Yeah, so hopefully this platform helps them and, helps ease the issue of vets not being able to find jobs over there. We'll have to see how this Sandbox progresses in the coming months. And with that, we've come to the end of our show. And at the end of every show, we like to quickly recap the stories that we spoke about for the day. So let's start off with our first story on Mac's new malware threat. We spoke about how Mac users need to be more vigilant because a new malware called Doc that infects them after they've downloaded a zip file via a phishing scam may just be the system's first major-scale malware attack.
Right, and it's time to feel the same frustration we PC users have been feeling all this while. So we also touched on Larson Studios' hacking incident. Apparently, the group known as the Dark Overlord have 36 TV shows from both cable and streaming services in their possession, and they're asking for a ransom from companies like Netflix and Fox to keep the content under wraps.
Yep, and then we moved into how non-gaming apps like Line and Tinder may overtake gaming apps in the near future in terms of how much money they make. The report where this came, this info came from, also named India as the largest untapped market in terms of spending power, although they have the second highest smartphone user base next to China.
Mm. Then a Korean company called Monit has invented a Bluetooth sensor that tells parents when a baby's diaper has been soiled by tracking heat and gas. These means parents don't have to wake their baby up for nothing, just to check if its diaper is dirty.
Mm-hmm. And lastly, we spoke about how a social network called Sandbox wants to help connect ex-military personnel to job openings as a way of helping them ease back into a proper working life. And then coming up next is the Breakfast Grill replay. Dr. Ross Tapsell was on the show this morning. He's a lecturer in the Department of Gender, Media and Culture at the Australian National University. So back in November 2016, the Australian National University launched a new academic research institute in a move that would gather around 40 academic staff and graduate students currently researching topics related to Malaysia with an aim to build a greater understanding of Malaysia. So Dr. Ross Tapsell talks about that initiative as well as their key focus areas of research.
And I just have to remind you all as well, it's 2 weeks before Enterprise Rocks, and that's our event about retail that's happening on Monday, May 15th. To register, go to bfm.my/rocks. And if you've missed any of today's stories, just download the BFM app on the Apple App Store. Be careful there, or Google Play, and you can stream us anytime, any place. This has been Enterprise Biz Bites with Frida Liu and Arvind Yuvaraj. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.